Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Ex-con Seth Zimmerman is making amends by helping the vulnerable in his former Amish community. This mission includes calling on Tabitha Yoder, who was shunned after divorcing her abusive husband. An uneasy friendship is just taking hold when Tabitha's ex-husband returns, and he's willing to do anything to get her back.
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, I'm talking with Shelley Shepherd Gray, the New York Times and USA Today bestselling author of more than 100 books, including Her Heart's Desire, Her Only Wish, and Her Secret Hope. So welcome to my show, Shelley.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited to speak about Unforgiven today.
Yeah, and so we're going to talk about that and talk about writing. It's just we're going to have a lot to talk about. But let's start with, why did you start writing romantic suspense novels? What was it about the genre that kind of drew you as a writer?
You know, I'm a huge reader. Maybe not every writer is just a passionate reader as I am, but I read several books a week in addition to writing. And so I am always drawn towards mysteries, romantic suspense, thrillers. I find those books really fun to read. And so even though I do write a lot of just straight romances, I love to have a romantic suspense book kind of in my back pocket or something. It's always interested me. When I wrote my first romantic suspense, it was a historical. It was over 10 years ago, and it was just I found it addicting. It was fun as a writer to keep the pace going, and so I love that at first, and so I've wanted to continue writing several romantic suspense novels. At least one or two a year, if I can.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, Shelley. It's one of the things that I like about the genre is the that puzzle piece of it too. And like you said, I mean, I read a lot as well, and I read a wide variety of ones, and I love not knowing who the villain is or trying to guess who it is. And I try to write my books that way, where they kind of have to guess who it is and why they did it. But it is so much fun to me to put all the pieces together. I don't think I could write a straight romance. I've tried, and I've always keep throwing in danger. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to give up and stick to romantic suspense,
which is
fine.
Tempting. Yeah. Sometimes I'll be just riding along, and I'll just pause, and I'm like, is this boring? Would I want to read this? And you're right, when you are writing a romantic suspense, you don't have those thoughts. I mean, because it just the nature of that type of novel, it just keeps things clicking along. As a writer, it's just a really fun way to spend my day.
Yes, and I mean, I think also with writing romantic suspense, I mean, one of the hard parts, I think, is making sure that all those threads, you know, that I've laid the good breadcrumb, and, you know, and that the big reveal of who's behind it or why this happened isn't, you know, fun left field, and that the reader feels like they got a satisfying ending, and the romance part satisfying, too. So those are always some fun challenges. But you mentioned, you know, writing in your day. So how do you find time to write? How does your writing days look like?
You know, I write every day. I usually write up 6 days a week, sometimes seven, if I'm really on a tough deadline. Mm. So for me, it's not too difficult to find time to write because it's pretty much that's how I organize my day. I make sure I get my pages done first, and then I'll do other things. obviously, you know, my kids are long gone and so forth. When they were home, it was a little bit different. So, but I try to write 10 pages a day. 10 pages is a nice amount for me. I can get them done in a couple of hours and still have time to take the dog on a couple of walks and do other things. So if I have to bunch it up towards, you know, 14, 16 pages a day, then it feels like my question starts going to be, well, how do I have time to do anything else besides get this book done? So that's kind of a long answer to a short question.
No, I like that. And it sounds like when you have to write more, writing can start to veer into that. It's another chore you have to do, right? Is that
right? Well, and I don't know any author, even authors who have just completed their first book. I don't know if I've ever met an author, and they're being completely honest, if they don't say, some days it's the best job in the world, like it's just amazing. But there's other days it just feels like a job, you know. And sometimes you would like to be outside, or you would like to go out to lunch or so forth. But you have a job to do, and your job is to make stuff up and write it down. So sometimes it doesn't work.
Yeah, well, and that's harder than you think. I mean, because sometimes we've all faced it. Maybe we don't have writer's block per se, but we're staring at that blank page going, ah, all right, what's going to happen next? You know, whether we're plotters or pansters or somewhere in between, we all face that time where writing feels harder than it should, or maybe than it used to, or that it did the day before. And that's, I think, when the discipline comes in. So how do you keep yourself writing when you face that kind of I don't really feel it today?
You know, I sometimes give myself like a treat, like you know, even if it's like, oh, if I get 5 pages written by noon, you know, I'll go upstairs and eat lunch. Or it's a really nice day, I'll go out. Or I always get my nails done, so I'm like, oh, I'll actually go, you know, leave the house and go do something fun for myself for a little bit. So I give myself incentives. Sometimes it's just I love turning a book on time. Some authors don't seem quite, you know, they just have a lot of things going on in their life. They aren't able to do that, but I usually am. So that's a big incentive to me too. The book may not be perfect, but I can almost guarantee that it will be due on the day I said I would turn it in. So that's an incentive for me too.
So you like those deadlines? That's what I'm hearing. You're a deadline oriented writer.
I do. Can you tell I used to be a sixth grade teacher? I was always about a good schedule. So I am. Sometimes I'm just like, I feel like that teacher part of me is like, nope, you said you were going to do it, you better do it. So
help. Yeah, no, I am. I mean, I don't have a teaching background, Shelley, but, you know, I still am a freelance journalist. And that means that, you know, I have due dates all the time. So I rarely miss them. You know, it's usually extenuating circumstances. I hate it. I hate it missing them. So I, you know, if I don't have a contract or something, I still make deadlines for myself, because that's a good motivator. Get those words on the page. Get going.
And it's just like practice makes perfect or something. Mm-hmm. When your head and all the rest of you just kind of says, you know what, this is how you do things. It's a little bit easier. I have a really good friend of mine. She's been a longtime critique partner, and she's a wonderful writer, but she's a terrible procrastinator. And I mean, mm-hmm. She'll say, oh yeah, I'm really far behind, I don't know. And I'll listen to her, and I almost feel myself, like my stomach will get in knots. for her sake.
Right.
So I, you know, it's for me, it's nice to just be like the little train that could. I just do a little bit every day and get what I'm supposed to get done.
Yeah, no, I love that. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that I always tell, you know, aspiring or writers who are young in their careers, you know, that it, you know, listen to other writers talk about how they get it done. You know, if you're having trouble with it, maybe try a few things. But if it's not working, you have to find out what works for you, what gets yourself in your chair in front of the keyboard and writing. What is that? What is the motivator? You know, is it little rewards like you talked about? Yeah, I mean, you have to figure out what your own self-motivator is.
Right, and I've told people the same thing that you have, Sarah. I mean, and every writer's different. I write a lot. I like to write a lot. But not everybody, you know, has a great need to publish multiple books a year. Maybe they're a one book a year person, which I'm making that sound like that's nothing. That's awesome, and so. You know, maybe you don't need to write 10 pages a day. You just need to write 3. There's not a thing wrong with that. As long as you just continue on, you know, no matter what your pace is or your ability or your experience, if you have a book in you, it's great to make sure you encourage yourself to actually get that book done.
Yes, exactly. I'm coaching a writer who's writing a memoir, and, you know, and she just, you know, one of the reasons she hired me was to get those words done, right, to get the thing done. And so the first week, I had her just write down how many words she wrote every day, just because I knew she wasn't keeping track. And she's like, oh, my goodness, she goes, I wrote like 1,200 words in an hour. I was like, yeah, that's good, you know. So now I said, we can do a word count goal, you know. I mean, because she just had no idea how much she was writing, what she was capable of. So it's just kind of fun to help her figure that out and when she's writing and all that kind of stuff, so that she can, you know, meet whatever goals she has.
Right, and it is. I think when you do meet a goal like that, it's the little boost you need, and sometimes that really is what gets you through. What gets you through a writing, you know, day is like, gosh, I thought I wanted to get 10 pages done or 2,000 words written, and I was able to get that done in you know, less time than yesterday. And so, or whatever the goal is, it's nice when you work by yourself, like authors do, like writers do. You need to give yourself some incentives and pats on the back, because there's nobody else that can do that for you. So
no, that's so true. When I was talking with this client, I was saying, you know, writing can be addictive. You know, once you in a good way, you know, when we get into it and the story and everything. So it's not, but you have to, so it doesn't become that chore all the time. But to get that point, you know, like I said, you have to have some sort of regular writing schedule.
Right.
If you just are like willy-nilly here and there, it's hard to keep that momentum and get that, come into that place where writing is fun and exciting most of the time.
Right. Well, and you brought up a good point. I think that's what every writer lives for, and especially if you're writing something fun like romance and suspense. There's a point in every book I write which pretty much it feels like every character are my next-door neighbors. Like, I know them so well. I know the setting so well. And I'm two-thirds of the way through. I know what has to happen. I can hear them all talking in my head, and I don't want to do anything else but live in that world. And I mean, it was so funny, when my kids were in college, especially, like, I'd get a call right out of the blue, and they would just know in like 5 minutes. They're like, your head is in your book, isn't it, Mom? I'm like, yeah, I'm, you know, we're stuck in the middle of a snowstorm right now. And they're like, okay, yeah, we're going to talk to you later. And But it is, and that on the slow days when it feels like, oh, I'll never get these pages done, you just gotta keep hoping. All right, I hope I get to that point where I love this book so much that I don't want to do anything but tap at my keyboard. That's just a wonderful feeling.
It is, Shelley. And it's also, you mentioned your kids, it's kind of funny. Mine are younger than yours, but they, you know, sometimes they'll come into the office where I'm working. And if I'm really immersed in the story, I'm just like, they'll say something and it'll take me a minute to realize, oh, they're talking to me. I need to get out of this story. And yeah.
I know. Yeah. And it's funny. My husband used to, and we, you know, when he's not traveling, he works from home too, and we'll meet for dinner or something. And sometimes he used to say, oh, well, what's been going on with your story today? And sometimes if I'm really into it, I'll start talking to these people about these people like they're real. And he'll just look at me and he'll be just like, yeah, you know, you made them up, right? they can do, you know, why are you so stressed? Like, they'll do whatever you need them to do. And I'm like, not exactly. Not like I need them to.
Yeah. Sometimes they can be quite ornery about stuff. So, you know.
Right.
You can't always wrestle them into where they need to be. Sometimes they're telling us, this needs to happen, that needs
I
to
know.
Happen. This is the day.
Right.
So, well, this has been delightful, Shelley. I could keep talking, but we are out of time. So thank you so much for talking about writing and being on my show today.
Oh, gosh, this is my pleasure. Thank you so much, Sarah. It was just a true honor to be visiting with you. Appreciate your time and having me on your show.
And listeners, remember, stay tuned, and you can hear an excerpt from her latest book, Unforgiven.
Now an excerpt from Unforgiven by Shelley Shepherd Gray. October, Crittenden County, Kentucky. He'd come back. Taking care to hide behind the curtain partially covering her living room window, Tabitha watched Seth Zimmerman walk down her front porch steps after knocking on the door. He'd waited for her to answer, of course. Maybe 30 seconds, maybe longer. The amount of time he waited didn't really matter anyway. Tabitha didn't open her door for anyone. Well, no one except for her sister Mary once a month. She hadn't greeted anyone else for a long time. After another couple of minutes passed, Seth walked to his truck, peeled off his tan canvas jacket, and set it on the hood. Then he fished out an axe from his truck's bed and walked to the woodpile and started chopping. It wasn't the first time he'd done any of this. Almost 2 years earlier, Seth had dropped off a pile of logs. He'd knocked on the door, no doubt to tell her about it. When she hadn't answered, he'd written a short note explaining why he was there. When she'd read his note, Tabitha had felt so guilty. Common courtesy said that she should thank him for his kindness, open the door, and face him at the very least. But the knot of tension in her chest and the mess of nerves zipping through her body had prevented her from doing even that much. She'd learned a lot about fear in the last 10 years, enough to realize that being cautious wasn't necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes it even saved one's life. Even though she knew Seth was no Leon and she likely had nothing to fear, Tabitha still hadn't budged. Instead, she continued to stand behind the heavy curtain and watch Seth chop wood, like some kind of twisted stalker. Or maybe because she was a lonely woman, and the sight of Seth Zimmerman chopping wood was surely something to see. All brawn and muscle, his body moved in perfect synchronicity as he chopped those logs. 3 months ago, the weather had been hot, and his cotton t-shirt had become damp, clinging to his chest and arms like a second skin. After chopping several of the logs into small, manageable pieces, he'd placed them in a stack near the front porch, and then drove off. Now, here he was again. This time, the October day was cool, and though he'd taken off his jacket, his body still moved in an easy, fluid motion. Every time he lifted that heavy axe and then brought it down with a satisfying thunk, her insides jumped a bit. Her former student had grown into a fine-looking man. Boy, she hoped he'd found himself a sweet girl to court. Seth deserved that. Even back when she'd been his teacher, she'd known there was an innate goodness to him. He'd proved it to her in a dozen ways the year she'd taught him. He'd assisted other students, helped her clean up the classroom from time to time. Once, he'd intervened when one of the oldest boys had gotten mad and knocked over a chair. And here he was again, doing her yet another favor that she couldn't repay. Tabitha knew she should somehow find a way to tell him that it wasn't necessary for him to come out to her house and do chores. Her mother would have chided her for taking advantage of his kindness. But even after all this time, Tabitha hadn't. All she seemed to be able to do was stare at him from the shadows of her home. What a sight he was, too! His face, carefully shaven, was lightly tanned. The muscles in his arms, now uncovered, clenched with every swing. Again and again he swung. He handled the axe like it weighed next to nothing. He hadn't even broken a sweat. She was embarrassed, she noticed. But maybe not surprised. Seth had been visiting her once a week for months and months now. The first time he'd appeared, he'd knocked on her door. She'd peeked out, saw his 6-foot form, short blonde hair and chiseled features, and knew exactly who he was. Her former Amish community's only ex-con. She'd been so frightened of him, she'd hurried to the back of her house and hidden in the bedroom's closet. There she'd sat, practically hyperventilating, reminding herself over and over that her door was locked and he was nothing like her ex-husband. She couldn't imagine him raising a hand to her for some imagined slight. An hour later, after working hard to get her breathing under control, she'd ventured back out. When she confirmed he was gone, she'd opened the door and found a paper sack with some apples, fruit, cheese, and fresh bread, along with a note.
"Tabitha, I don't blame you for not wanting to answer the door. All I wanted to do was chop some of your wood and drop this food off. A lady out in Marion gave me too much. You take care now, Seth."
That had been the first of many visits. Sometimes he'd chopped wood. Sometimes he only stopped over to drop off a carton of food. Once he'd trimmed her hedges. Maybe about every fifth time he knocked on the door, waited for a response that never came, then wrote a note. She'd saved them all. Seth Zimmerman might have gone to prison for killing Peter Miller, but he wasn't a bad man. The rumors were that Peter had attacked Beth Ann Hostetler, and Seth had stopped it. No one but Seth and God knew for sure what happened next. All that had been proven was that the two men had fought. Peter had fallen and hit his head on a rock. Since she knew just how much could happen when no one was watching, Tabitha reckoned almost anything could have transpired. Truth had a way of getting twisted and turned when it touched the bright light of day. Returning to the present, she rested her head against the window's frame and watched Seth some more. After yet another thwack of the axe, he put it down and stretched his arms. Then he turned and looked her way. Stark, steel-blue eyes met hers and took her breath away. Tabitha gulped. There was no kidding herself now. Seth knew that she'd been watching him, probably felt her eyes on him every time he'd come out. He knew she watched him, but didn't have the nerve to even say hello. He probably thought she was the same woman he used to know, his teacher who had been barely 3 years older than him, the woman he used to tease about mice and bugs while she pretended to be too mature to tease him back.
thinking of all the kindnesses he'd done, all the gifts and food he'd given her, Tabitha went to the kitchen and filled one of her baskets with homemade bread and a jar of the strawberry jam she'd put up at the beginning of summer. She braced herself, then walked to the door. It was time to go outside and thank him in person, at last. Yes, she knew a lot about fear now, and her heart and head weren't in as good a shape as they used to be. But that didn't mean she didn't know right from wrong. Besides, even if something bad did happen between her and Seth Zimmerman, Tabitha knew she could take it. She'd learned that there was an awful lot that she could take.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.